In a very short time, we've been forced to reevaluate our values. Values related to employment, family, and home. As we come out of two history-making pandemic years, connecting with others is more important than ever. But it's safe to say that the way we can and want to connect has changed. We are not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. Connection means that we need to work together to build and put into practice whole and multifaceted plans for our clients so that they can reach their own personal successes. For some of us, life is returning to pre-pandemic norms, where we work out of an office on a set schedule. Others may have no office to return to and may spend working hours on a couch or kitchen table in their own home. And some may be straddling schedules where they sometimes go to the office and sometimes work in their own personal space. These experiences are the same for our clients who are navigating a world that is still deciding what work-life will look like. How can we support them while adapting ourselves? Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Join us as we talk through relevant topics that support you to do your best work. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect. Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley Hoth-Murray, and you are listening to the Getting Connected podcast. This is the second of a two-part series on childcare. Last time we talked about the role of employees in childcare services, and today we are going to talk about the role of mothers in facilitating childcare. As I've mentioned before, I'm the mother of three young boys, two who are public school age and one who attends a licensed childcare program. I've worked professionally with a toddler or two at my feet when childcare was very difficult to secure. I've supported the daily workings of a co-op preschool as a board member, and I've been grateful to drop my kids at the door to two licensed centers, knowing that my children would be well cared for. Even though I would argue that my husband and I have a healthy and modern relationship where we split many tasks that have traditionally fallen to women, I definitely fill the role of primarily securing and managing childcare. I will be the first to alter my professional schedule to manage illnesses and absences if possible. I'm the first to be contacted if there's an issue, and all my friends seem to echo my own experience. I feel very personally invested in today's topic. I'm joined again by Thalia Simplonius and Rachel Crane from Workforce Collective. And I'm just going to remind you, listener, about our guests with their bios. So Workforce Collective is a nonprofit organization that serves the community's efforts to address workforce challenges and opportunities through research, data, and collaboration. They have hosted the Niagara Workforce Planning Board for the past 25 years. They're building on decades of learning about labor market issues and taking action to develop workforce-related solutions. We are back with Thalia Simplonius. She is the research and project lead at Workforce Collective. She brings a wealth of knowledge to research and community projects. She is so enthusiastic about developing new ways to share their work. She uses her skills to analyze and report on labor market data. She really loves to dig beneath the surface and understand trends related to important issues like women in work, timely today, youth employment, and labor shortages. We have been very lucky at Literacy Link Niagara to have her as a regular guest at our literacy service planning table. She has always made large data, lots of numbers, feel really palatable, very relatable, and very actionable for our programs. Also joining us again is Rachel Crane. She is the learning and engagement lead at Workforce Collective. She works with the community through action research, including design thinking, which she was just talking about in our episode a few weeks ago. It's just all about just being open to possibilities. And when Rachel speaks, you can hear how passionate she is about finding community solutions and working collaboratively with the people who come to the table. She has a master's degree in leadership. She deep dives into wellness practices and she loves to work with people from all walks of life. She is the mom of 2 under 5, so I imagine she has also facilitated some childcare in her daily life, and she really has gratitude for childcare providers who support her family. So I'm interested to hear both professional and personal thoughts today. Let's dive into this topic. How are you doing again, ladies?
Doing well, Ashley. Thanks again for having us today.
Yes, happy to be here again. How are you, Ashley?
I am good. It's always fun to be on with people that you know. and just have really honest conversation. So I'm excited to have you back today. So should we get started?
Let's do it.
All right. So mothers in monogamous heterosexual relationships, even those who work the same amount outside of the house, they typically have more responsibility for arranging childcare than their male partners. And there's lots of data to support this. But why do you think that this is the case?
Yeah. And thanks for sharing your own personal anecdote about how it works in your family. I'd say it's quite similar between my husband and I and our two littles. Typically tend to figure out and manage schedules. It's a strength that I have, but that responsibility tends to fall on myself. And then likewise, when the kids were younger and we were deciding who's going to take a leave, my husband did take a leave, probably more than a lot of men do, but I took a longer one. And it was a lot because, he makes more than me. So there's a lot about pay equity in our family that it just didn't make financial sense necessarily. But I think there was also there's social expectations that have even been handed down to us, maybe unconsciously. So I'll share again my story about my mom, who she immigrated from the Philippines, worked really, really hard in mental health care. She was a mental health nurse. But I saw her day in, day out, despite how hard she worked. She actually probably made more than my dad for a lot of their careers until they split. But when they were together, doing it together, she made all the meals. She made sure that someone was there for us when both my parents worked shift work and weren't there. Just that default family care was always on her shoulders. So I grew up seeing that. I grew up seeing a really independent working mom who managed and led a lot in our household, but certainly bore the brunt of that family and child care responsibility. And I believe, and I'm doing some work to unpack that, but I believe that I have inherited that too. And my husband saw that mostly in his mom as well. So we work really hard at just deconstructing that possibility, that model that we saw within our family, and figuring out how to do it differently. But it does take a lot of conscious effort and work.
Yeah, it's that invisible mental load that we talk about for mothers. We are the same. My husband took a leave. It was shorter than mine, but he did take a leave. He doesn't necessarily make more money, except his job is my work has always been more precarious, contracted year to year, and he has just a more solid foundation in his workplace. So, and also there was, he works in a very traditional workplace, and there was almost the expectation for him not to take the leave from his workplace, and the fact that he might lose opportunities in the workplace that we had to, obviously I don't agree with that, but that's the world that we live in. And we have to work for the benefit of our family within that realm. So yeah, interesting. Let's talk about the economic impacts to mothers who take on a larger load of these domestic activities. What is the economic impact?
I can start talking about this one. So we know that, individuals have children, maybe see outcomes in work, maybe fewer promotions, impacts to pay over time. This obviously also depends on the age at which people have children. There's a lot of research going out there into these kind of personal impacts that women experience. However, we also know that when we're looking at the childcare system, there's uneven access to it. It's not necessarily affordable for everyone. When looking at quality that is available across areas too, that can be an impact on your ability to engage in the childcare system and whether that's a feasible option for you, right? So impacts there as well.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, like we've seen impacts just in our own family where I haven't been able to maybe take the same, engage in the same work because my husband's job is so solid that, you know, that has to come first. And that really shapes access to many different things in life, like childcare. Women are more likely, I think, to work like part-time or flexible jobs because they have to be available.
Yeah. And we know, like, through, you know, the early stages of the pandemic, women were more likely to experience employment losses than were men. And this was also offset then by increasing in child and family care throughout those months as well. So that's been another economic impact that women have experienced, also relating to, you know, taking on these shares of domestic activities. And this happened kind of linking back to the first question too, Ashley. We saw even for people, both parents who were both working from home, women still took on more of those domestic roles. Even though, you know, you're both working, you're both at home doing so. So it's still carried through regardless of whether you're out in the office or working remotely.
Yeah. Yes. Again, I can echo that, that in my own house, even just getting like kids online, supporting that online learning, like it's not even about, you know, when we talk about daycare, it goes beyond age six. Mm-hmm. And just, I want to go back again to that invisible, that mental load that's carried. Like sometimes it's just so hard to quantify it and say, I need help, because you can't shut your brain off. Because we've been, I think, Rachel, you touched on this before, but it's been socially ingrained in us. We have been socially constructed to take on these feelings, these roles, this idea that I need to schedule and manage and support my offspring. And my husband, who's wonderful, just hasn't been socially constructed that way. So he could look at me and say, well, you know, turn off your brain. Mm-hmm. But I can't pass what's inside my head to him on a to-do list. It just doesn't work like that. So that obviously affects the work we do, the work we choose, our own mental health. Mm-hmm.
And like society still has these ingrained beliefs, right? Like research from only 10 years ago shows that, you know, people believe that ideal situations for families with young children is the mother works part-time, father works full-time. So, and that's not that long ago, right? So still we're like, these societal beliefs are ingrained. And as you both noted, there's a challenge trying to actively work out of that, right?
Yeah. And as much as I agree that we should do that, I don't embody that.
Yeah.
In my own personal life. So mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about best case scenarios. What would an effective childcare system look like in Ontario that would benefit mothers?
I'll chime in here because someone who's a lot smarter than me in this area, named Dr. Kate Bezenson, who's, by the way, right now advising Prime Minister Trudeau's office. So she's on a sabbatical from being a professor at Brock in sociology. And she does a lot of work around childcare policy and economics, exactly what we're talking about, actually. And has shared some of her work with me and a really sage nugget of wisdom that was, you know, if we really want changes like this to happen, we're going to need, yeah, more family-friendly policies at work, but including or maybe even centered on the father, because again, we are talking heterosexual couples that typically follow the path of like the mother takes on the work. But if we had actually like mandated in workplaces that the father is going to take off time, like equal time, then we'll see the shift in the system that we're hoping to see, with more equity in pay even, and equitable access to childcare. And we'll just see a lot of cultural, I think, shifts in norms. But sometimes it has to be that policy level, like mandated, right, to make us see things differently. So when she said that, it really opened up my eyes that we can do all the work around having, different changes to maternity leave or parental leave for mothers and benefiting mothers, or have mothers, you know, working groups or whatever, resource groups. But until you get that father buy-in. And again, if we want to get really deep and philosophical, it's because we still have those patriarchal structures at work and societal structures that mean that men are privileged in a way that they won't see or feel these impacts the way that women do. They just don't, because the whole system's been designed to optimize kind of their life. So when she said that, that really changed things for me. That's the kind of thing that we'll explore again in our design labs and design thinking, of what if we had mandatory parental leave for fathers. Mm-hmm. And we have also models that have that. They pointed to, in I think it's like Eastern Europe, some of the Nordic countries there have
they
tested
this
best,
out. They do the best stuff.
There you go. Yeah. And they've tested this out and they've said, like, you know, men have to have that mandatory parental leave and it's equalized their pay. Hmm. Like, we know that will happen.
Yeah. Interesting. Just side note to that. So my husband is a federal employee and he made a career shift in his late 20s. And it took a few years to end up as a federal employee. But when he started with the government, he had to do, I can't remember the timeline, but 3 or 4 years, so many hours to jump up a level, a pay grade. And it was it's not an apprenticeship, but it was like that. Like they have to do it when they onboard, when they start, in this role. And he took parental leave during this time. And so from the moment that he took parental leave, to obviously the moment that he went back, he was not completing those hours. So someone who had started, a man who had started at the same time as him, actually a few months later, he didn't take leave. And so when a promotion came up, my husband was not eligible in the same way. And so now forever, for the rest of his career, we will be behind. And it was interesting because it was this light bulb moment for my husband that this is what all the women who take maternity leave and probably parental leave experience, that it's not about work effort. Mm-hmm. It's there's nothing that they could do to make it better. They could not put in these hours. They needed to be home with their families. That was where they wanted to be and where they needed to be. And yet they were set back. He's written about the issue to management, because he now recognizes it and he speaks about it as a woman's issue, even though he himself experienced it, because predominantly it's his female counterparts that are taking the time.
Yeah. And that's reflected data. That's amazing that he experienced that and is now an advocate. But yeah, it takes that, right? That sometimes that personal experience, really going through it, to be able to fully empathize with the mm-hmm. situation and then become that change agent inside. But there's all the data that say that the gender pay equity is not actually about gender. It's actually like mothers. So working that the leave that they take, it's the time away due to actually the maternity leave or, like you said, if you get called because your child is home from work or home from school, having to stay home, you get called and you have to take off that time. And then that has repercussions with how others view your productivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back to best case, because mm-hmm. I took that in
a... Oh, yeah, we kind of took a tangent. I took
that in the tangent. So, but let's talk about other effective childcare system possibilities. Mm. Do we have any other ideas?
Yeah, so a couple things. So this is kind of stemming from looking at the challenges we've seen over the past couple of years too, from either families who are families with children that are using childcare. While looking for, they had a lot of difficulty finding both availability of childcare in their community, but also affordability of childcare. And this is another challenge for parents with young kids who don't have kids in care, but we're looking for care, again, affordability and availability. So those are kind of the two top challenges that have been noted, and it's up this year compared to, you know, 2 years ago as well. So it's a consistent challenge, and we see this significantly more pronounced for low-income families, single parents. Other impacts of this is that, you know, parents may stop or delay school or training, work fewer hours, change work and study schedules. So it's something that can help increase availability of childcare and the affordability of it may be key. I don't know if that's answering your best case scenario, but at least two things that should be considered when addressing these challenges.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Canada is rolling out, you know, federally, the Canada-wide early learning childcare system. That's an amazing first step. It's a big win for people who have been advocating for this since, I don't know, the 70s or maybe even earlier, right? Like, people have been asking for that for a very, very long time, to have universal childcare at $10 a day is what they're, you know, aiming for. So that would be to Thalia's point of increasing access and affordability. And then we will continue the conversation around, but we won't have that system unless we have the workforce to actually uphold it. Mm-hmm. So we need to come together for that collective workforce strategy for sure. And then we'll see the benefit to mothers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously we support the, I support the $10 a day. I find it interesting, obviously Ontario, we could go into a whole political conversation right now about, Ontario and how it's rolling out and but I'm hopeful, like we seem to be having a lot of changes, happening in several different areas, you know, even with talking about like extended parental leave. So, you know, maybe mom feels like she doesn't want to be home for 18 months. So it's easier to split up. We're seeing more companies, more federal employees, provincial employees, they're able to access top up. So if they do take time, it's not the same impact if dad, you know, makes more, which is great. $10 childcare rolling out. We're not at $10 yet, but we have childcare with a YMCA, and 2 months ago, our childcare fees dropped by 25%, which was awesome because they signed on. And just that little bit extra means so much right now, like given inflation and the cost of, you know, milk and bread and all of the other things that you need to raise a family. So I think what both of you have echoed today is it's really about coming at it from several different areas and changing the overall thought landscape around mothers as the key facilitators. And we will do that. And hopefully, you know, 20 years from now, women will be socially constructed to think differently. And it doesn't happen overnight, but I can already see it changing. So
yes, well said, Ashley. Yeah. Great summary. And also thank you for these conversations, because this is how change will happen, right? If we talk about it, spread awareness, get informed, and then we can change minds and then hearts that will be needed to change the whole system.
Yeah. We're overhauling one podcast episode.
That's it. There's a new tagline.
All right. Well, let's end with our final question. We ask all guests this question. Your answer does not have to be connected to the topic, but of course it can be. So Thalia, I'm going to ask you this because I asked Rachel in the first episode, but what is one tool, material, resource that you wish people used more?
So today, I've answered this a couple times, but I do have a new one for today. And actually, what your final comment was actually ties in really well with it. So I just wanted to quickly mention a course that I think we've all taken at Workforce Collective. the GBA Plus course or Gender-Based Analysis Plus course. So it's actually available. It's for free. You can take it from the Government of Canada, but it's really a focus and introduction to how do you look at data from a gender-based lens, but also how does that lens become more intersectional when you're looking at different demographics of individuals, and how do the unique needs or lenses we can take to particular issues then become even more important. So I think that's a tool that is important that I just wanted to put a plug in for, just as another way to frame work people are doing, or even, you know, when you're considering different social issues as well, there's many different lenses we can take.
That's a great one. Oh, we're going to put the link to that
sure.
in our show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah,
super accessible. It's free. Yeah. I'll also say, so Thalia pointed out that it, you know, changes the lens on data. It's also for anyone who's designing projects or programs. It's a framework really that you can take to make sure, just kind of like a checking in to make sure that you're looking at it through a gender equity lens. But like Thal said, it also, you know, then bridges into racial equity and other identity factors.
Yeah,
very cool. That's a great, very relevant to today's conversation.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me today. Again, I think I said this at the beginning of the first episode, that it's always so much fun for me to talk about topics that personally affect me and also professionally affect me. And having you both on and being able to have a really honest conversation and bring light to something that affects a lot of women and a lot of families, has been awesome. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, opinions, and data. And thank you for listening, listener. We look forward to getting connected next time.